The Ask NT Writes Anything podcast is back.
Hello, this is Tom Wright speaking to you from my study here in Oxford in England. I'm really looking forward to the fact that Mike Bird and I are relaunching the Ask NT Write Anything podcast, looking at key questions that people have sent in, but also developing some themes that he and I have been interested in and we're eager to talk about with one another.
Listen today on your chosen podcast provider and head to asknwrite.com to submit your question.
Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. Happy Sunday evening to you. I'm Jeff Lucas. This is Premier Christian Radio. This week, I was looking at an article that was discussing problem solving, especially in business. Apparently, Akiji Toyota, the Japanese industrialist inventor and founder of Toyota Industries, developed the five whys technique back in the 1930s, and it seems that Toyota is still using the principles today. It's quite simple. When you repeat the word why five times, the nature of the problem as well as its solution becomes clear, according to Toyota. And let's face it, it might be worth listening to his wisdom because his company has done rather well. The five whys are used for drilling down into a problem, and then five hows are used to develop the details of a solution to a problem. So this rather intrigued me, and so in honour of this technique tonight, I'd like to present five reasons, five bite-sized pieces of wisdom, some might say just common sense, although it seems to me that in our mad world, sense is not always that common these days. Tonight, we'll be thinking about five whys or reasons to be nice to your minister, five things that we shouldn't say to a Christian who's battling depression, and then five reasons for us to put our phones, our smartphones, down for a while. Five whys, here tonight on Premier Christian Radio. We're thinking about five whys this evening, and here are five reasons to be nice to your local minister. I know I'm biased because I've been a pastor for what feels like around 400 years, recently retired, but given the choice between engaging with pleasant, encouraging, smiling souls and then those carping critics who make piranhas look like tame goldfish, I'd obviously choose the latter. But it's worth thinking about why we should be nice to the women and men who lead us for one simple reason. Encouragement takes thought and strategy and shouldn't just happen because it, well, just happens. Years ago, Ian Dury, together with his blockhead friends, sang about reasons to be cheerful. Well, here are five reasons to be nice to our local minister. First of all, they frequently take the blame for God. It's true, Christian leaders represent God, who is currently invisible and at times seems unavailable, especially when things go horribly wrong in life. When people get frustrated or even angry with God, there's no customer support line to call, and so they frequently take out their frustration on the person they most associate with God, which might be their vicar, pastor, leader, or priest. Getting slapped on behalf of the Almighty is not a happy experience. Take it from me. Secondly, they're required to say some things they'd prefer not to say. The Bible contains some awkward truths, and if our ministers are going to be faithful in preaching it, they'll have to deal with some rather tricky passages on sensitive subjects like divorce, war, adultery, sexuality, and let's brace ourselves for the subject that tends to light the blue touch paper. Yes, it's money. When speaking on those themes, they're unlikely to please all of the people all of the time, which means they likely will take some heat. Let's cool them down with some kindness. Number three, why? Why should we be kinder to our ministers and leaders? Well, they're often the target for gossip. In some churches, Christians don't gossip, of course. They share. And under that guise of sharing, you know, please pray for the pastor, he or she is really struggling right now, we can give the impression that the pastor is struggling with faith and is now a fully paid-up member of the Humanist Society, struggling with temptation and has opened their own private harem, or is struggling with anger towards the congregation and is now a serial killer whose modus operandi is striking down the after-church cup of tea crowd while wearing clerical attire. Gossip destroys people. Let's not pass it on. Number four, well, they don't have a hotline to God. Some people think that their ministers have a VIP pass to the courts of heaven and begin each day with a happy little chat back and forth with God. But often they don't. They too struggle with doubt, unanswered prayer, and when going through wilderness times in their own faith, often have to appear more certain than they are, not because they're faking it, but because it's inappropriate for them to dump their own private struggles on their congregation every Sunday morning. If we sometimes feel that our prayer lives are more AOL dial-up than high-speed wireless, know that those who lead us frequently feel the same. And then, number five reason for being kind to your minister, pastor, or vicar is this. They usually don't have a cunning plan for world domination. All right, there are some wolves out there masquerading as shepherds. Recent headlines in the Christian press demonstrate that tragically. There are power-hungry, authoritarian, clerical control freaks who would be better leading a fascist regime than a local congregation. Spiritual abuse is a very real problem. It does happen, and it's serious. But the majority of Christian leaders are ordinary people, mainly because God only uses ordinary folk, nothing else is available, and they're simply doing their best to respond to a vocational call to help people to discover Jesus. So, let's go ahead, make their day, and help them out by being nice. In our series of five whys, let's now turn to five reasons to put our phones down just for a while. You know, it's a familiar and vaguely depressing sight. We're a culture glued, stuck firmly to our smartphones. Wander through any airport, sit on any train, and we'll see hundreds of slaves. People ignoring people, transfixed instead by the small screen that they clutch in their hands. Obviously, technology can be a wonderful tool, including the internet generally and the smartphone specifically, but it shouldn't take over our lives. Whoever thought that our new gods would be small handheld devices before which we kneel, figuratively speaking, in humble homage? So let's do ourselves a favor, dethrone that god, give our phones a rest, and for good reasons. Again, five reasons. Firstly, that little screen might be sucking the life out of us. We tend to think that information is power, that we're invigorated when we're in the know. There's a very real fear of missing out that we suffer from. But that's a lie. In 1988, Gordon MacDonald wrote the Christian classic, Restoring Your Spiritual Passion, and pointed out that we often live as emotionally drained souls because we're overloaded with choices and information. Now, he wrote that 3 years before the dawn of widespread email and internet use. Now, we're drowning, awash with useless knowledge. Secondly, the world doesn't need to know that we like porridge. Before Facebook, we never called a friend after breakfast and said, guess what? I just had oatmeal. I've got to hang up. I've got 4,377 other friends to call. Bye. The world will keep on turning if we fail to report that we've had our breakfast, gone shopping, or have recovered from a season of constipation. Honestly, it will. We don't really want to know. Thirdly, when finding out about people, we're missing out on people. Here's the news. Unless we're extremely selective, those hundreds or thousands of so-called friends on Facebook are not actually our friends. They won't be snacking on the sausage rolls at the bash that follows our funerals. But if we half listen to the people that we're with while concentrating on the souls that we'll never meet, our actual friendships will go offline at high speed. Let's not miss out on engaging with interesting, colourful, needy, inspiring people in favour of the faceless, apart from a dodgy profile photo on Facebook. Fourthly, life was meant to be about conversation and not a newsflash. Twitter, or X as it's now called, is most often about declaration rather than conversation. But life was never meant to be a series of pithy announcements made in 140 characters or less. Let's not issue a press release, but have a real chat with a real person instead. And then fifthly, five reasons for putting our phones down. Our phones won't feel hurt if we ignore them. I have a friend who is wise, loving, and often a brilliant listener until his phone rings, beeps, or chirps. He then feels compelled to answer it, even though he might be in a critical conversation with someone who's sharing a marriage crisis, a major career change, or a forthcoming operation. There might be a person on our phone, but our phone is not a person. So let's take control, be the boss, ignore it. Being a machine, it won't get wounded, feel neglected, or withdraw into a sulky silence, not talking to us for 3 days. Believe me, it'll be ready to talk again whenever we are. We're thinking about five whys, five reasons for doing certain things, and here are five things not to say to a Christian friend who says that they feel depressed. It's challenging and even heartbreaking. A Christian friend confides, sometimes with furtive whispers, that they've been feeling really low and they're wondering if they're clinically depressed. Would we please pray for them, and do we have any advice? And then comes that awkward silence when we feel compelled to say something, just anything, that might be of help. We didn't mean to be clumsy, to palm them off with a cheesy slogan, but before we even had the time to say cliché, one popped right out of our mouths. We need to remember that intentional, focused listening can be more helpful than just saying things with the view that what we utter is going to fix everything for a depressed person. Our interests, compassion, presence, and care matter more than any words that we might say. Remember the advice that comes not from the book of Proverbs, but from Ronan Keating. Sometimes we say it best when we say nothing at all. But when it comes to what we might say, let me present five possibilities that will likely make your friend even more depressed than they already are. If we don't want to qualify as a friend of Job, and those guys were seriously unhelpful, let's avoid making these oft-used remarks. Let's not say, get over it. You know that if they could, they would. That's the point, because people don't decide to be depressed any more than a victim chooses to get mugged. While a depressed person might well need a very gentle nudge to take some action, see a doctor, consider medication, look at their diet and exercise, reflect on sleep patterns, what they don't need is an aggressive cheerleader with a megaphone hollering, get a life, because they want a life. Let's never say to someone battling depression, come out in Jesus' name. Incredibly, some Christians are rather quick on the draw when it comes to linking satanic attack, even demonic possession, with depression and other forms of mental illness. Who knows what untold damage has been done by people who, armed and dangerous with that book about deliverance, try out their theories on people who are not laboratory rats but priceless human beings, much loved by God. Yes, we are involved in spiritual warfare at times, and we should all remember that. But suggesting that dark forces are always the source of darkness is unlikely to help. On the contrary, let's never say to the depressed, well, just have a bit more faith. People who've been rather famous for their faith, like Elijah, ended up depressed, camped in a cave, and wanting to do nothing but sleep and possibly stop living. Add to the list the Apostle Paul, Jeremiah, Jonah, and yes, Jesus, because he was hardly happy in Gethsemane, and I'm not being irreverent, just realistic. We'll see that faith doesn't guarantee exemption from emotional turbulence. Elijah had faith to raise the dead, call down fire from heaven, and control the weather. let's be especially hesitant about telling someone who is low to have more faith, especially if we haven't called down fire, controlled the weather, or raised the dead this week. And by the way, waking a teenage son up in the morning doesn't count. Let's not say, I'm going to be there for you. It's not that we should never say this, but we should only say it when we really mean it and we know that we can deliver on our promise. Depressed people don't need to add disappointment with their friends to their list of things to be less than cheerful about. Let's offer support by all means, but make sure that we don't create unrealistic expectations and that we deliver on what we promise. This includes that pledge that we're going to be pray for them. If we say it, let's do it. And then let's not say to the depressed person, everything will be fine, you'll see. Because here's the news. Everything does not always turn out fine. Ask the disciples of Jesus, who for the most part ended their lives as martyrs. There's no guarantee that life is going to get sunnier just because we say that it will. Life can be hard ongoingly, and we're not promised anything different, but we are told that with God, we're never going to be alone again, regardless of what we feel. We do have hope and help to offer, but let's make sure that it's real. So, following the technique of Sakishi Toyoda of Toyota Industries, asking five whys, tonight we've been thinking about reasons to be nice to our pastor, minister, Christian leader, five things not to say to a depressed Christian friend, and five reasons for us to put our phones down for a while and just give them, and perhaps us, a rest. Come to think about it, we should all think more when we offer solutions potentially to a problem. We all need to develop wisdom as we continue to navigate the journey of life, and it's wonderful when we can pass that wisdom on. But let's always ensure that we engage brain and heart before opening mouth. That way, we can genuinely be helpful and perhaps authentically find solutions to some of the challenges and problems that we all face as fellow human beings. See you next week.
Lucas on Life.